This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 99 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Preparing for this episode was a little depressing. A few weeks ago, I walked through some of my biggest misses of the 2017 fantasy football season, and I had no trouble picking the 7 or 8 players to focus on for that episode. But this episode's about looking at players that I hit on and going through the process and how I hit on those players. And it was a lot harder to come up with the 7 or 8 players that I wanted to talk about for this episode. So I started thinking, like, am I bad at this? Am I really bad at fantasy football analysis? Why can't I find players that I nailed during the season? I thought about it longer than I probably should have, and I realized a few things. First, it's always easier to remember the bad. Negativity bias exists. Second, hitting on a player or being right about a dude is almost an expectation. I mean, my job is to give you fantasy football advice, so I should be right a lot. And when I try to figure out players I was really right about when looking back on the season, it's kind of hard because the baseline expectation is to, you know, be right. And then this ties into the last thing. I don't know what would be considered right. Once a season's over, I usually have very kind mentions on Twitter with people thanking me for certain moves that they made that helped them win a championship. But sometimes people name players that I didn't even realize I was higher on than consensus. Like, I had a lot of love from folks about Alvin Kamara. Apparently, an early season 15 transactions column featured Alvin Kamara, and it was a week or so earlier than most people got on Kamara. Now, I certainly don't consider myself as someone who is higher than normal on Alvin Kamara this season. I actually was pretty low on him before he was drafted into the literal perfect location, and I've talked about that on this podcast in the past. Situation matters in football and fantasy football with players and prospects. And while Kamara is definitely a better running back than I thought that he'd be at the NFL level, he also was in the best situation imaginable for his skill set. That's what made him a fantasy deity this year. But like, I had no idea that I helped people get Alvin Kamara. I thought I was pretty average from that perspective. I drafted Kamara in my own leagues, so I know that I didn't hate the guy. And I used my own advice. Don't let conspiracy theorists hear that though. Yes, fantasy analysts, they do use their own advice. Apparently I was early on Kamara though, like a week early or something. And that's what made prepping for this podcast a little interesting. I don't really have context. Like, I think I have a pretty good grasp on the industry and where most analysts are projecting players and so on, but the season moves at such a fast pace that some of the in-season stuff is hard to keep track of. Nevertheless, I still want to walk through this exercise. Again, I'm not doing this show to toot my own horn and say, look at how awesome I am at fantasy football, you guys. If you think that's the case, shut this episode off and go listen to me talk about my misses a couple of weeks ago. I know I get things wrong. That's the first step in being a better analyst and forecaster. But I do get things right too. I know that I do. Sometimes things align and work out and I dance around without pants on in my living room. And each player I'll talk about today were pretty much the core group of guys that had me pantsless and profitable throughout the 2017 season. So let's dig in and look at these players and what led me to getting things right. Let's look at the process and not just the result. It wouldn't be right to start this show off without talking about late round quarterbacks. According to MyFantasyLeague.com's average draft position data, this year we had Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, and Derek Carr as the first 8 passers drafted in fantasy football leagues. Brady finished 6th in points per game when you include Deshaun Watson and 3rd in fantasy points. And Russell Wilson was 1st in total fantasy points scored. But Drew Brees finished 9th in total points and 13th in points per game. Matt Ryan had 0-3 touchdown games. And Marcus Mariota and Derek Carr basically weren't even stream-worthy throughout the season. The 2017 campaign saw Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, and Alex Smith as super fantasy-relevant guys, and Cam Newton, Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Phillip Rivers, there were a ton of worthwhile passers who were selected near or past the start of the double-digit rounds in fantasy drafts. As a lot of you know, I've got another podcast that I host with Denny Carter, another analyst, called Living the Stream. On that show, we select waiver wire quarterbacks, tight ends, and defenses each week to stream. And because we don't have the luxury of just holding on to someone like Carson Wentz or Alex Smith if we hypothetically snag them or mention them early in the season, we're making choices based on bad players, especially late in the year. Because late in the year, all the good quarterbacks are already owned. This year, we streamed a QB6. We streamed a quarterback that was better than all but 2 of the top 8 passers, essentially. And that's without the luxury of saying, we got Alex Smith and Carson Wentz. Which we did. This was arguably the best late round quarterback year that we've ever seen. And that's a big hit for me. There was also Kareem Hunt. Now, guys, I can't stress enough how awkward it is for me to talk about the players that I hit on because I hate the look at these picks that I got right mentality that we see from analysts at times in the fantasy football world. It's really obnoxious. Again, I'm only doing this because it's important to look at process. I looked at misses and now I'm looking at hits. But Kareem Hunt was for sure a hit for me this year. He was a top 10 back in this year's class according to my prospect model, but he wasn't shockingly good. It wasn't like he was far and away the best running back in this year's class. What initially got me on Kareem Hunt was, and I've mentioned this many other times on this podcast, it was the actions that the Chiefs took to get him. They not only drafted him with a fairly high pick for a running back in today's NFL, but they traded up to get Kareem Hunt. And the guy in front of him on the depth chart, Spencer Ware, was not a special back. Spencer Ware is not a special running back. I don't think Ware is bad, but he didn't have a strong production profile in college because he led his college team in carries just once, and he'd seen 200 plus carries just once in the season, including college. And that season happened the year before the Chiefs went out and drafted Kareem Hunt. So what does this tell you? Yes, the Chiefs, of course, needed running back depth. But the Chiefs could get running back depth without having to trade up into the third round to get a running back. They clearly liked Kareem Hunt. So if you combine the Chiefs' actions with Hunt as a prospect, and again, he was a well above average player, you have yourself a lot of potential, especially as a mid to late round player. And then, of course, Spencer Ware went down. And when that happened, I wrote an article on NumberFire titled, Kareem Hunt will be the top rookie running back in fantasy football this year. It wasn't the hottest take of all time, but Hunt, at the time, wasn't the consensus top rookie running back. We had Leonard Fournette people, Christian McCaffrey people, Dalvin Cook people. Hunt did indeed finish as the best rookie running back this season, though Alvin Kamara was arguably better because you weren't getting as many down performances from him. When you started Alvin Kamara, when you knew that Alvin Kamara was going to get some run, Alvin Kamara generally produced. Kareem Hunt gave you some bad weeks. And no, guys, I didn't expect Kareem Hunt to be this good. But that's why this is a process over results game. There's variance attached to every projection or end result. With Kareem Hunt, he hit the high end of any projection out there. So if your process didn't help show that Hunt could be this good, then you probably didn't own Kareem Hunt. Mine had Hunt as a legit RB1 entering the year, and that's how he finished the season. You know, when friends or really anyone asks me what I nailed this season, one of the first things that I talk about is a little lower key than some of the other things that I'm talking about on today's podcast. It was back after week 6. The Saints had played one game without Adrian Peterson, and Mark Ingram, in that game against Detroit, ran the ball 25 times for well over 100 yards and 2 scores. Generally, fantasy football is a buy low, sell high game. That's what my 15 transactions column and podcast is all about each week, finding players to buy and sell at the right time, often buying low and selling high. In Ingram's case, after week 6's game, I wrote, sometimes in fantasy football, you have to buy high. And if you want Mark Ingram, that buy high time is right now. From that point on, through week 16, Mark Ingram was RB4 in fantasy football. What had me buying Ingram even after that performance was twofold. First, he had fantastic market share numbers in that Lions game, and he had seen all of the goal line work. In an offense that was going to score points, that's huge. But so was their upcoming schedule. What helped Ingram in that week 6 game was game script. But at the time, New Orleans' defense was looking pretty good, a lot better than they were last season, and their next 4 or 5 games were against opponents where they'd undoubtedly be favorites. So not only were you getting Mark Ingram with a nice market share and goal line work and a good offense, but the team itself was going to be seeing positive game scripts. And without Adrian Peterson in the mix, you could feel much more confident in using Ingram week in and week out. Even though Adrian Peterson wasn't seeing a lot of volume before joining the Cardinals, there was still always that risk that he'd steal goal line touches or work in that backfield for the Saints. It was a good example of showing that buying high in fantasy football can indeed pan out. Some of you may remember my, I don't know, I guess I'd call it harshness towards Rob Kelly during the preseason. And I'm certainly not here saying, I told you so, after he was injured for most of the year. But I do think the overall process with Rob Kelly was right. It was to go for the ambiguous upside in a player like Samaje Perine, or maybe you went with Chris Thompson, instead of the plodding Kelly, a player who didn't see a significant workload at Tulane. Kelly ended the year with just a 3.1 yards per carry average and a sub 36% success rate. Now don't get me wrong, Samaje Perine wasn't much better. I talked about not being overly high on Perine as a prospect entering the season as well, and really wish that Washington would have gone with another back in the draft. But even still, the process was there to go with the higher ceiling player. Rob Kelly didn't provide that high ceiling. The ambiguity of Samaje Perine did. The Washington offensive line was a mess, though, all season long, but Rob Kelly was really not good, you guys. And I'll certainly go with the same method for a running back like him in future seasons, looking for the true difference maker at the running back position instead of someone that you're just hoping to give you RB2 numbers. Next on this list is someone who I didn't necessarily tout entering the year, but he was someone that hit my 15 transactions column for weeks on end, and that's Adam Thielen. And I wanted to talk about Thielen because his 27 campaign is such a good example of touchdown regression. In the same article where I wrote up Mark Ingram, I wrote up Adam Thielen. At the time, so it's through 6 weeks, Thielen had a decent enough red zone market share, he was top 10 in the league in targets, top 10 in overall target share, and he was 6th in the league in deep ball targets. He just wasn't getting the love he deserved in fantasy football because he didn't find the end zone until week 8. But from weeks 8 through week 16, he scored 4 times. He actually should have had closer to 8 touchdowns this year instead of the 4 that he did score based on his yardage and reception totals, but that's also what I love about his season so much. It's a great example of regression not meaning overcorrection. It's not like Thielen should have scored 8 touchdowns during the second half of the year to sort of catch up on what he missed to start the season. It's that he scored what he should have been scoring, or at least closer to that number, based on his volume and production. So anytime you see me tweeting charts of how many touchdowns a player has versus how many he should have based on his yardage and reception totals, I'm not just doing that because it's fun. I'm doing it because it's actionable. It can lead you to players like Adam Thielen, who was a beast for fantasy owners throughout the season, which was a down year for wide receivers. Sometimes things work out even if your process was wrong, and I thought that it would be a good idea to share one of those instances on today's show. Sammy Watkins. I was into Watkins as a Buffalo Bill, but when he was traded to LA, I stayed far, far away. And the main logic there was because Goff really didn't push the ball down the field his rookie year with the lowest air yards per attempt rate, whereas Sammy Watkins was one of the best big play receivers in the game. If Jared Goff continued to struggle to get the ball down the field, Sammy Watkins would not be relevant in fantasy football. That was one of the bigger reasons I didn't like Watkins. Now, I also realized that we didn't exactly know what type of market share that Watkins was going to see given he joined the team late, and we knew the Rams ideally wanted to be a run-first squad. Or at least that's what we thought. So I was nervous about Sammy Watkins. And looking back, my process was only partially right. The deep ball thing was not correct. I talked a ton about the Rams and Jared Goff on the Misses podcast, but Goff was over a yard better on completed passes air yards per attempt this season than he was last season. I mean, like I said a couple of weeks ago, we saw the biggest jump in efficiency from one year to the next than we've seen from any quarterback in NFL history with Jared Goff this past year. What was correct was the market share piece. Watkins ended up not playing a top role in the offense as Robert Woods stepped in and Cooper Kupp saw a lot of looks in the slot. And then all the while, Todd Gurley was seeing mad love out of the backfield. And speaking of Cooper Kupp, I openly hated him as a prospect as well. Well, I guess hate is kind of a strong word. I wasn't all that into him from a ceiling perspective because he was a slot guy entering the NFL at age 24. He was fine, but where was that ceiling? Later in the summer, though, I realized that there was opportunity for Cooper Kupp in year one, and I did fire off some tweets about Cooper Kupp potentially leading the Rams in receptions, so I guess I didn't miss everything about the Rams this year. One of the tougher things that fantasy analysts had to decide this year was whether or not they were going to be on Team Adrian Peterson or not. And I don't mean when AP was a Saint. I mean when he was a Cardinal and he came out in Week 6 and he went nuts against the Buccaneers. I sided with Adrian Peterson isn't the Adrian Peterson of old, and that ended up working out. But why? Why didn't I believe in Adrian Peterson? Well, it's actually in that same Week 6 to 7 15 transactions article that featured buying Mark Ingram and Adam Thielen. And in that article, I also had add Deion Lewis. Basically, if someone asks you, hey, is this JJ Zacharyson guy legit? Please just show them that article and no other articles that I wrote this year. None of the ones where I said to sell DeAndre Hopkins. Please do not show those articles. Show the 15 transactions for week 7 article. But that game featured some crazy things happening to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Cardinals' opponent. Jameis Winston was knocked out. Quan Alexander missed that game, and the Cardinals had an insane positive game script. We shouldn't have just assumed moving forward that Arizona would see that type of script week in and week out. When a big performance happens in football, or really any other sport, there's always some reason for it. Sometimes it's just because that player just went absolutely ham and had a great day. Sometimes that happens, but that's also usually too simple. When you dissect a game, you can start to see things and go, oh, so that's why this wide receiver went nuts. The team's top cornerback got hurt. Or, yeah, it makes sense that this running back did what he did. His team had the ball consistently, and the opposing team didn't have their starting quarterback in the game, which aided in that positive game script. That's what happened with AP. His range of outcomes was that, sure, he could have been, quote, back. But the logical outcome was that it was a fluky, tough-to-duplicate game. Now, I was going to talk about Aaron Jones on this show, but instead of digging into and saying the same things that I said in last week's mailbag show, I'll just leave it at that. I liked Aaron Jones entering the season, and Aaron Jones was good this year. And the main reason was because he was a freak in college from a production standpoint, and he was also a great receiver. But the last player I want to dig into on this show of things that I got right this year is Doug Martin. I owned zero Doug Martin across my fantasy leagues this year, and I play in a lot of fantasy leagues. And it was for a lot of reasons. First, given his suspension, it was kind of laughable that his ADP was in the RB2 range. That piece alone made very little sense for a player with his resume. A lot of people latched onto his 2015 season as the reason to get Doug Martin. They pushed aside his awful 2016 and focused strictly on his 2015, where he ran the ball 288 times for 1,400 yards and 6 scores. I have a hard time doing this. I have a tough time drafting players coming off of legitimately horrendous years, and less volume is certainly going to be there. With someone like Todd Gurley, I owned him in fantasy football this year because volume is king, and he was going to see volume. We knew Todd Gurley would see a lot of volume this season. But with Doug Martin, that was no lock. Jaquizz Rodgers vastly outperformed him in 2016, and the Bucs' backfield still had other bodies. There was some sort of competition. And there were even reports of Martin not having the starting job locked up when he came back from his suspension. I mean, the bottom line with Doug Martin is that there were loads of red flags. And when there are that many red flags, I tend to shy away from that player unless that player has a sincere, crazy upside. Martin finished as RB4 in 2015 with 232 PPR points, but that type of production was usually seen by lower-end RB1s in other seasons. Running back just sucked in 2015. So to me, along with his peripheral numbers, that upside was a little bit fake when it came to Doug Martin. I just want to reiterate that this episode was not at all intended to be a look at me type episode. If that were the case, I wouldn't have published my Mrs. podcast a couple of weeks back. To me, it's just really important to look at where things went right and wrong and to correct and alter those processes. And hopefully listening to episodes like this one, that'll help you refine your process. Thanks as always, though, to all of you for listening to this podcast. If you've yet to subscribe to this show, please do so by going to Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And if you're on iTunes, do me a solid and leave a rating and review. It's a great way to give back to the podcast. If you have a mailbag question for Friday's show, hit me up on Twitter, @LateRoundQB, or email me at jj@numberfire.com. The sooner you get those questions in, the better. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.